This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin, and you are listening right now to live music played on the keyboard by Michael Virpin, as well as Cheng Wee Lin. The third Malaysian Jazz Piano Festival will take place on the last weekend of this month, starting on Friday, ending on Sunday. What intrigued us about this event are its offerings of workshops, which the festival calls, with such sterility, clinics on improvisation. One for beginners, and on a specific aspect, bebop lines.
Well, you already been told, Michael Virpin, Cheng Wee Lin are here, but we also have somebody very special, or something very special, the keyboard from Roland Digital Piano, on loan for today's show.
Before we jump into talking about how you teach someone to be creative and to improvise, I would like to find out how this festival has progressed over the years. I assume that this upcoming one is the third. The first was held in 2014. So, gentlemen, what kind of participation are you getting?
Well, we actually have a lot of participation building on last year, which was really successful. And this year, I think we got our promotional stuff and our social media stuff out even earlier. So there's been a lot of interest.
And who are the people who are interested in attending the clinics?
Well, mostly music students or music enthusiasts. We do get some people curious and to check out what's going on, but generally people who are actually interested in the subject matter.
I think a lot of people have this idea, continuing for some reason, that jazz is kind of a mature music lover's game, you know, to put it kindly. And do you find that you have young people kind of interested now, kind of interested in attending and engaging with these things, or do they continue to be of a certain generation?
Well, we have a lot of mature 7-year-olds.
Seven-year-olds at your clinics? Yeah.
That's right. I actually had somebody on Facebook ask whether they could bring their child to come. I said, perhaps maybe a bit of prior experience, but, you know, by all means, come.
No, like back to Lynn's question about, you know, jazz music is for the more sophisticated or at least more mature, because you need to be exposed to this kind of music. So how old are your youngest participants?
Actually, Soon Heng, the classical colleges, ABRSM, have recognized that it's such a popular form that they now have a jazz ABRSM course that you can, a syllabus which you can actually have for children as well. So this whole thing about it being for mature people and all that, I don't know if that's particularly true. Not to my experience, though.
I think it's more like an acquired taste.
See, like, acquired taste, because you must taste it first before you can acquire it.
No, but the thing is, it's quite a complex art, so it's definitely appeals to people who wants to listen to something which has more detail, you know, more elements rather than something that's easy listening.
So when we talk about that ABRSM module, then how does it differ? I mean, I think most of us have been forced, or were interested in, mostly were forced to take piano lessons by our parents, and so people are used to the classical module, you know, what you have to learn, the standards.
Sure.
What's the difference between what we might know of as the ABRSM module and then the ABRSM jazz piano module?
Well, I think I don't know very much about the ABRSM. I just know they have it. But I think the element of creativity and spontaneous playing and playing off, you know, in a jazz particular manner is very, very essential to it. It recognizes playing as a gift and that kind of idea. But this is one of the reasons why I actually wanted to have this festival, was so that we could position, especially to the classical crowd, that studying jazz is a terrific supplement.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think it's a substitute, because I think we learned, myself, we're all classically trained.
Yeah, we both came up the background.
Yeah, we came from the classical thing. But this is a terrific supplement.
I've never asked you this question, Michael. When did you, after playing classical piano, decide, hey, jazz is what I want, because you have made it a career?
Well, actually, it was introduced to me by my cousin, who brought me recordings of Oscar Peterson. And from that moment, I think I was like in primary school. And which is why I think it's got nothing to do with age. It's got to do with whether you got to hear it early at what age. And then it captivated me. And from that point onwards, my goal was if I can play or even understand what he was playing and play a little bit like that, really, I'm very happy.
Whelan, what about yourself?
Well, it's like when I was young, you know, the only source of music
You're
was...
You're still obvious. Young, by the way, yeah?
Oh, no, not as young as I look. Anyway, yeah, as a child, the only source of music is, you know, the radio. Or back then, we still have cassettes, not even CDs yet. So, I mean, the radios will always play stuff which is more mainstream. But occasionally, you do get, you know, in late nights, you listen, some DJs will put on some jazz music. I was like, whoa, what is that? That's different, you know, that's refreshing. So I guess, yeah, that got me thinking and like, wait, I need to find out more about this. I'm
also curious about this. You know, Michael, you said that you heard Oscar Peterson and you wanted to understand. And I assume part of that understanding is a little bit of deconstruction as well. You know, trying to understand how did you do that and how can I get to do that? How do you break that down when you're listening to a jazz pianist?
I think it was really important because after I listened to Oscar Peterson, it took me a while to understand that it was still the same instrument that he was playing. It was still a piano. And being classically trained and everything classical, when he's playing all his jazz stuff, I was like, no, that can't be the same piano I'm playing. My piano absolutely does not sound like that. But once you realize, oh no, this is a pianistic thing. And then, you know, I was very fortunate. I played in bands. I played in all kinds of rock groups. And then, you know, I had my own jazz fusion group in the late 70s, before all of you were born. And from that point onwards, we listened to recordings. I listened to Chick Corea, Herbie Hancock. We just copy.
Copying. So again, it's all about being exposed to it, and then something about the music just kind of resonates.
Grabs you. Yeah, that's right.
We'll go to a break at this point, and we'll have you play something for us as we lead out. Okay. And then come in, we'll talk some more.
One, two, three, four.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Front Row on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. I'm with me in the studio, Lim Soon Hing. And you are hearing two gentlemen on the piano right now, Michael Virapan as well as Cheng Wee Lin, both of them jazz pianists. And they're here talking about an upcoming jazz festival. Now, gentlemen, I wanted to talk a little bit. You know, we kind of addressed the whole kids thing, and we've kind of established that it's sort of for everybody. Let's talk about Joey Alexander.
Anybody in the jazz world who hasn't heard of Joey Alexander?
Yeah, I mean, he's got... he's been nominated for two different categories for in this upcoming Grammy Awards, which will happen today. So, I mean, today in America will be tomorrow. And so he'll be, you know, it will be good to know what will happen to him. But again, he's somebody like him so young. Where is it coming from? I mean, a jazz player like him, born, and it's not something that's taught.
I think the big picture is that we have, from time to time, children exhibiting tremendous talent and ability that cannot be answered. Where does it come from? I don't know, God, perhaps. But, you know, we have had little children who are mathematical wizards, who can do incredible things and amazing feats, you know, in delightfully freakish, I don't know what you call it, but Joey Alexander is definitely one of those kids.
Do we have a pool of young people like that in Malaysia? Because you're running clinics for young people. They haven't quite established. You said there was somebody who asked that, I have a 7-year-old I would like to bring to the clinic. On the whole, how old are the people who are attending your clinics?
I think the average would be college kids, college level, because that's where we are actually pushing it to the music colleges, the ICOMs, the UCSIs, the UMs, USM, UPMs, UITM, and Aswara. That's where we want to, because we are also professionals. We want to create skill the professionals for tomorrow's Malaysia. That's our goal. Is the emphasis is education, educating young tomorrow's musicians.
Do we have somebody like Joey?
I think the question is, you know, it's not really important that we must have Joeys. You know, I think it's sufficient that we have people who are genuinely interested in this art and who wants to put the effort to learn. In fact, I think if you just expect, you know, child prodigies to come out, and it can be very, very discouraging. You know, it's like people are like, I don't want to learn if I can't play it like that. And that's a very bad place to start
and
from.
And what kind of message would it send children who are really practicing hard and say, you're useless unless you're a child prodigy?
Don't bother.
Don't bother. Because why bother, you know? Because you'll never be Joey Alexander. Of course, you know.
So when you're coming from that place of being interested, of practicing, of really starting to put in those hours, what is, I guess, the next step? I mean, when you're looking at a student, you both teach, you know, when you're looking at a student and thinking, you know, I hope this is really good, this is fun for you, how do you kind of get them over to the next level of not being Joey Alexander necessarily, but, you know, perhaps just getting better, or, you know, becoming more interested in performance or recording or all the other things that make up a musician's life?
And that's where we come in, because a lot of music is actually instinctive and natural and talent. So you don't even have to be literate. As we can have a lot of wonderful musicians who don't read and all, they can just play. But we're talking about career. And to have a career, you want to expand all your possibilities, and for which knowledge is king.
So you must still go to school.
You have go to school. And you have to also be diligent and practice hard. But what we are trying to do is to show you what to practice and how to practice to get there as fast as is possible.
If I may add, like, it's more like you are aware that there's always something to learn. You know, there's always a next step. You don't have to worry too far in the future where you'll be, as long as, you know, there's always something in front of you to work on. I think that will solve a lot of problems about, you know, what I'm going to do in the future.
What next?
And what next? Just look at the next step.
Looking at this specific clinic then, what will be happening?
Well, Whelan's clinic.
It's a jazz improvisation for beginners, as it's written. But I think what it is actually is how to start right, how to start learning improvisation the right way.
I mean, the word suggests that, you know, you have to be spontaneous and things happen inside your head and you're just channeling this energy out. How do you teach something like this? It's like teaching creativity.
It is. If you use the analogy of language, let's say you have a bunch of people go and your friends are going to hang out in Starbucks and have coffee. That conversation that you all are going to have is not scripted. It's spontaneous. And how did you think of what to do, what to say? We're talking about that kind of spontaneity. But if you didn't have facility with language, you didn't go to school, you don't speak the language, you're going to sit there like a mute.
You're trying to say things which doesn't make sense. You know?
Right. So that's what we're trying to teach you, is to teach you how to speak a jazz language. But when you're there, what you're going to say is spontaneous.
Part of conversation, that's an interesting analogy, but also part of conversation is listening, right? I mean, you have to listen in order to respond.
Absolutely.
So how does that factor in to improvisational jazz piano?
Well, if you're playing in a group context, in an ensemble context, well, you have a topic, which is what we call a song. So we're trying to speak about the song, and we have things called the jazz form, where we have beats and bars and chord progressions.
Just like any piece of music, any
That's
score.
Right. Yeah. Any score. We keep to a certain understanding. But within that, we are very attuned to, firstly, what's the chord progression, etc. And the other is also what's everybody else doing.
What they're doing.
And, you know, what tempo we called it off at. And we are mindful that we all maintain certain ground rules and play off each other.
Michael, you're talking a language that I'm not familiar. I'm not sure, Lynn. Are Lynn familiar?
I can pretend.
can you help us? No, I'm sure there are listeners out there also figuring out what they're talking about when they talk about chord progression.
Right. Whelan?
Well, simply put, a chord progression is a series of chords put together in a cohesive manner so that a melody can occur.
Demonstrate. That's why we got a keyboard.
Let's just say we have a... this. Right? Just a loop of four chords. Right now, it's just harmony. So what do you say on top of it? See? There's a melody, but I'm improvising it. But it has to make sense. So...
And to make sense, you have to follow the rules of music. That you have to follow
conventions,
the, you
know, rules. Yeah, it's like the building blocks that can enable something to be built upon.
And mind you, those rules are the same rules of language. When we go and meet as friends, we speak a language that we all understand, and it may be breaking every rules of English grammar, but we knew what we meant.
Yeah, like in Malaysia, everything is no stop. We still know what they mean, right?
We know what we meant, and just like that, we have a general big picture, but we are free to make things up, and we are free to make mistakes, so to speak, quote unquote mistakes. Make it up, it's okay.
And give me another one also, which is the 2-5-1 cadence.
Well, I sort of just played it.
Is that the same thing?
Cadence is something like you have to bring. Okay, say you're having you're speaking a sentence. You need to bring it to an end, right? Otherwise, you cannot just leave a topic hanging. I can just talk to you and then just go off. It doesn't make sense. Same goes with music. So a cadence is a way to bring, you know, a moment to a pause. See, you can hear it like, all right, there's something that ends. It's a closure.
So when you have a clinic with young people, what exactly do you do for them in terms of, like, I will teach you now cadence. Is that what you are doing?
Actually, to Whelan's course that he's conducting, or the clinic that he's conducting, is predicated on the fact that you can have a baby who is born from African parents, or a baby who is born from Chinese parents, and you can put them all in the same room, and I defy you to tell which one is which.
Because they all sound the same.
All babies speak the same language. And so all beginning jazz musicians, or students, make the same sounds.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's what we came and we discussed. We realized that and said, okay.
How do we address this?
How do we address this and move them along with simple ideas. Like, for example, a major scale.
Right.
So played in time. Okay, right. So that's a major scale. Now, if we offset it by half a beat, just starting a little later is an idea which we could bring to this kid and say, hey, why don't you play your major scale and just wait half a beat and then you go off?
Are you adding an accent to baby language? So, you know, basically, like they're all sort of speaking the same language and you're teaching them their accents.
And accents is what we call, you know, rhythm and how to sit on the groove and all that. And this little idea, say, oh, wow, this is a great idea.
Sit on the groove?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A bit like riding your motorbike, I think.
And trying so you not don't to fall off. Yes. Okay.
It's more like we're trying to nudge them in direction so that they speak correctly. Yeah. So, right.
Is there such a thing then, therefore, you don't speak correctly?
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
So it can be like, you know, you're playing jazz wrong. So therefore, it's not even jazz.
Then, yes.
Yeah. Oh. Like we just said, jazz is like a language. There are ways to speak it, and there are ways to say it in a way that will not sound jazz, contrary to what most people think, you know.
Out of curiosity, I'm not going to address the right and wrong jazz issue. It's just so contentious. But when we're talking about clinics, I've always wondered this. You know, we sometimes have musicians come in and then they say that they're running a clinic, right? Or they're running a workshop. How much do you want, or are you honestly expecting people to take away? Because in the immediate week, you know, they might remember that, oh, right, they said sit on the groove, or they said to do this and that. And then after that, how much is it going to be them internalizing it and coming up with their own ways of expression?
Actually, that's really a great observation, Lynn. Last year, we took notes as to how to improve the clinic for this year. And one of the things we discussed was that, you know what, it'd be really great if we put out an overview and bullet points as to what this clinic is going to entail, which you can get from our website, MalaysianJazzPianoFestival.com. And the clinic notes are there, and the overviews are there, so that you, when you come, you have an expectation, maybe you can prep yourself, or you can even decide, okay, I want to attend this clinic. So that's one big improvement, to prompt everybody what the clinic plan is going to be. Secondly, this year we're actually going to have a video camera positioned above the hands of the one conducting the clinic, so you can actually see on a big screen what the hands are doing. And Roland is also Roland Asia Pacific, our sponsor, has agreed to actually put tryout pianos at the side, so you can go there and actually try what is being. So to try to
while the clinic is happening.
Yes. So wow. You can go and try quietly and get really your hands immersed in it. Because we find that we really want to make big impact on clinics. It's a really teaching points. But another aspect of the clinic is that, like Whelan, for example, is with ICOM. We have clinics run by Justin, who is with UCSI, for example. And you may be an ICOM student, you can't access Justin, except through our festival, you get to...
Yeah, it's the only time of the year where all students...
I think Michael is selling really something here.
Yeah. I'm selling the festival. And that's why I'm here, right? But you get to be able to learn from people who you normally, in the rest of the year, can't access.
No, I find this very, very interesting that you know, you have people working together. You're trying to promote the industry, but the question that she asked, though, is that what will happen after? For something you don't have control over anyway, right? I mean, you bring all these young people and you give them the skills or you teach them the skills, you show them how, but what happens after?
Actually, I'll give you an example of what the impact of things are. When I was in Berkeley, I took piano lessons under the great Ray Santisi, who's a legendary piano teacher. And he came and said, "Oh, you know, Michael, you have big hands. So show me how far you can reach." So I could reach an octave and maybe an octave and a tone, a ninth. He says, no, you can actually play a tenth. And I said, "Oh, my hand had to stretch." The idea was so simple. He just showed it to me one time. The execution of it took me 6 months before I could comfortably do what he had.
So you had to practice the technique.
Yes, the point being that these ideas may be simple to understand, but the execution of it is transformative. If you can acquire it, execution takes maybe a year, 2 years to get. So we're not looking at big impact, big knowledge, and big textbooks. No, we're saying these little ideas can transform you in dramatic ways.
But people have to practice.
Yes,
that's why.
I mean, you know, musicians have to practice. Otherwise, they are not musicians.
Yeah, they're not even good.
So that's what's going to be happening with the clinic. That's, you know, all happy and benign. Is there also a competition?
Yes, we're very, very proud. This is our second competition. And this year we had 18 entries. And we chose eight.
We had to whittle it down.
Yeah, we had to. Otherwise, the competition would be too many days. But we have now eight really wonderful young pianists who are going to compete for it. And the prizes are actually by Roland Asia Pacific and also Diversity Arts Festival 2016 is sponsoring the cash prize portion of it.
I guess with a competition like this, when you have people playing and they're improvising, the judging must be quite difficult.
Not really, we do look for certain elements, and it's like we through how the participants playing, we can actually gauge their how they approach the music, how they improvise, and you can actually gauge how mature they are when they play.
How much of it is technical skill and how much of it is heart? I think everyone likes to believe this idea that, you know, heart, that's what will win competitions.
I think we can't put a number, we can't put a percentage to it. It has to be both. You know,
for heart, I think maybe we could put a basketball hoop there and get them to after the shit. They also count how many shots they got.
No, because, I mean, there's some performative competition, like, you know, synchronized swimming, diving. You know, it's all very technical.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
But then if you are really in that field, you can see good from great.
Even divers.
Just like that, you can see good from great. So we are really, you know, professional musicians and professional pianists. We know good when we hear it.
And some of us are quite particular as well.
Yes, that's right. So straight away we know, okay, that's good. The question is choosing the top three.
Yeah.
And we get together at the end of it. We deliberate, and we like last year, the first one we had, we weren't quite sure. So we talked about it and discussed it, and to be fair, and we are very happy with the end result.
I was going to say, I hope you guys argue. No, I mean, I would feel good as a competitor if I knew that, you know, it was so hotly contested even among the judges that you actually fought about it, you know? Right. And that I think that's a sign of a good competition.
And that's a sign of the impact of MasterChef, you were saying. That's how they do it as well.
MasterChef, basketball hoops. It's like,
language.
Language.
This interview is like jazz. It's crazy.
Improvising.
Exactly. Free-flowing.
And you also have three performances, three concerts.
Yes.
Are they different concerts? Are they similar? I mean, are the programs the same every evening? What was happening?
Well, the first night is, I think, one of the most challenging aspects of playing jazz piano is playing
alone.
Solo piano. So the first night is really exciting because, in fact, all nights are exciting now, but the first night is particularly exciting because it's just solo piano work. Playing just by yourself. And the second night, we are playing two pianos, piano duets, and three pianos. So that's immense fun. And as a feature, we're all bringing our own compositions to play with each other.
How many pianos are too many pianos? Three sounds like a lot.
Yes, no. Probably three. The first year we did it, it was so... three pianos was too many. But the second year, we really practiced hard and coordinated ourselves because we have different senses of timing.
Yeah.
So when we started the sound as one, it was really exciting.
Is there somebody conducting when you have two people playing?
No.
Or you just, again, here, just, two guys looking at
head
each
signals,
other.
Eye wings and shoulders, and just like you're cueing us with your finger when you start playing.
The ears are the conductor.
Oh, the ears are the conductor.
And the third night is when we do the classic piano trio, piano, bass, and drums. And we have performances there. So to answer your question, they're completely different.
I've been to concerts where the music is so captivating that you really are sucked into it. But I've also been to performances where somehow the music is there technically, but somehow you're not engaged. Right. What is the reason? Is it because of the acoustics? Because, I mean, you're playing in a KL pack.
Yes.
Are you doing anything extra to enhance the sound?
We are at KL pack Pentas Duo. Ah. Farida American will kill me when I say this, but I think Pentas Duo sounds
better
of the better of the two Pentases. I'm just going to pay for this.
I agree.
Hopefully not with the stage. So the clinics are, for specific musicians, people have signed up. But is the public allowed to sit in and watch and listen, or is that going to be a bit too intimidating maybe?
The workshops?
Yes.
No, workshops are open to the public.
Yeah.
And anyone can walk in.
And it's absolutely free.
And you're teaching one person while the others are watching.
No.
We're teaching a group.
A group. It's like a class, master class.
Last year, actually, on a Sunday morning, we had almost 50-something people show up at 11 a.m. on Sunday morning.
On a Sunday morning, no less.
So that's how popular these clinics and workshops are. So we thought we'd just really improve it this year.
Wonderful. Thank you both very much for coming in today. I've been speaking with Michael Virapan, Cheng Weilin, and you've been hearing from, we've not been speaking to, they've been speaking to, the digital piano in the studio today from Roland Asia Pacific. And the third Piano Jazz Festival starts Friday, Jan 29th. It'll run through Sunday, Jan 31st at the Kuala Lumpur Performing Arts Centre in Sentul. Clinics will be held in Indesini, and concerts, which is a rehearsal and performance studio on level 2. Concerts are at 8:30 p.m. every evening in Pentas 2. Tickets are priced 68 ringgit with student concessions at 25 ringgit for each concert and 150 ringgit for all three. The clinics are free. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin with Lim Soon Hing, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.